Well, if Aretha Franklin is the queen of soul, Otis Redding was the king. Had he lived, Otis would have turned 75 this month. He was only 26 years old when he died in a plane crash in 1967. This past weekend, Macon hosted a festival to honor the soul singer, which included a performance by his two sons. Mark Hrabowski is the author of Dreams to Remember, Otis Redding, Stax Records, and the Transformation of American Soul. Celeste Headlee spoke with him last year when his book first came out. She began the conversation by asking Mark what Redding's career might have been if he had lived past his mid-20s.
This is, of course, the million-dollar question that we'll never know. We'll never know it about people like that, like Hank Williams and the Lynyrd Skynyrd and Patsy Cline. We just don't know, okay? He was 26, which leads you to believe he had another good two decades left of being an influence, being a mover in the industry. I think he would have probably gone into the production end, but still would have retained, the performing aspect, because that was who he was, turning himself inside out when he sang. But he was a man of great ambition. And a lot of people didn't realize that when he died, it was actually at a crossroads of his career. The suspicion was he would have left Stax and gone to Atlantic and had a whole different phase to his career. So we really don't know. We just have to enjoy all the living he did pack into those years.
You know, it's interesting that you mention his work as a producer, because I think many people don't know about that. And it was a revelation to me to read about that in your book. Can you tell me a little bit about what he was like as a producer? Let me use his own quote here. He was talking about the recording of Respect.
Right.
And he said at one point, it took me a whole day to write it, 20 minutes to arrange it. We cut it once, and that was it. What was he like as a producer?
Yeah, well, that's because that was the whole Stax thing. It was so different from even Motown, which started in the same humble origins as Stax. But Motown was a very high production, high tech operation. Stax is sort of like a Stone Age operation, but it was perfect for a guy from the Georgia backwoods like Otis, who could just come in and let it fly and record two or three or four songs in a couple hours and be gone. And the songs would be perfect. It was like a perfect storm, and it really reached its fruition when Otis came along in 1962. And that he virtually carried it on his back from then on. That's how he produced.
Let's hear, actually, a little bit of that song, Respect.
What you want, honey, you got it. And what you need, baby, you got it. All I'm asking for is respect when I come home.
So you were talking about Stax Records, and I wondered how much of it was kismet, because in the collaboration between Stax, Volt, and Atlantic Records, they had 167 songs that made the top 100 on the pop chart, 250 songs in the R&B chart, and that's in a relatively short period of time. Did they just get lucky, or were there some smart people who recognized talent when they saw it?
Well, it's always a matter of luck. Even in Motown with Berry Gordy, it was a matter of luck. It was a very slow start, and then people started coming on, like the Supremes and the Temptations and Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder. And then when Otis came on, it was, like you say, kismet, because he really focalized everything that they wanted to do there. They wanted to keep it very simple. They didn't want to. They always had the vocals recorded at the same time as the instrumental. There was no instrumental track, because everything was like done like it was in a club, like an R&B club.
Yeah.
He'd come in, he'd sing, they'd play. A lot of the time by instinct alone, which is an amazing thing when you consider these great songs. It was never laid out in arrangements on charts. So he really focalized this because he was able to do it so perfectly.
So let's hear Otis Redding's very first single. This is These Arms of Mine. Take a listen.
These arms of mine. Arms of mine, they are yearning
we hear that now, and we've heard it for 50 years, more than 50 years, and it may not sound revolutionary, but at the time, this really struck people's ears as something, a very different sound. What are we hearing here that made Otis Redding so different from so many of his contemporaries?
Well, you see, this is the perfect example of the simplicity and from the gut, not from the mixing board. How many songs are an audition tape that become a song that's released in a couple of weeks and becomes a hit? That was actually Otis's audition tape at Stax, when he didn't even know he was going to have an audition, because he came up as the driver for another guy who was having an audition, Johnny Jenkins, in whose band he played at the time in Macon. He didn't know he was going to be recording for Stax Records, and they put him in front of a microphone, and that's what you got from Otis. It was always the same. It would come from the heart and the soul, and he would knock you out when he did that.
So if you're out there listening and you're an Otis Redding fan, we want to know, what is your favorite Otis Redding song? Dave Zirin writes, so many best songs, but the best moment is that pause after I've Been on I've Been Loving You Too Long. And then S.C. Josen says, I've Been Loving You Too Long and A Change Is Gonna Come, Can't Decide. So let's take a listen to A Change Is Gonna Come. This was originally sung by Sam Cooke, but here is Otis's rendition. I get chills when I hear that, but how did he distinguish himself from, say, a Sam Cooke, who also did that song beautifully? What was Otis's personal touch on this music?
I think it was the fact that when he did another person's song, he would cover them. It sounded nothing like the original. It sounded absolutely nothing like Sam Cooke. When he did Satisfaction, it sounded absolutely nothing like the Stones. That was his gift, being able to take any song. Bob Dylan wanted him to do a song, you know. He wanted, just like a woman, okay? He wanted Otis Redding to do that song. And Otis actually had a crack at recording it, but couldn't get the intricate lyrics, couldn't really get it down, and wound up not doing it. But that's just an example of all of these people, these powerful influences in music, who would have died if Otis could have recorded one of their songs.
Well, one of the things you point out is that he could not read music, and you describe how that affected the way that he both wrote and recorded. How was that?
Well, he recorded. He had everything in his head. He was one of those few people who could write a song in his head and come into the studio and have it all arranged in his head. And he would play a guitar in the studio. He wasn't a musician, but he came in with this old guitar, and he would know how to just play the basic chords. And from that, it would start falling into place. The horns would start falling into place. The bass line would fall into place. Steve Cropper would add that little saucy seasoning at the end on the electric guitar. And that's how it would all form together out of what was in Otis's head. I don't think I've ever come across anybody. I've written a lot of music books. I don't think there was ever anybody who came in with a song perfectly formed in his head the way Otis did.
So then that brings us to the song, and he still holds the record as the only person to hit the pop charts with a song after his death. He died in 1967, and after that, this song was released, Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in. Then I watch them roll away again, yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away.
This is a song, Mark, that many people point to as having been influential. Why? What is so influential about this song? Why does it have such impact?
Because it was completely against type. It was proof that Otis could take a song and go away, play against type and still move people. In fact, that song they didn't want to release when he was alive. They had no intention of releasing that because it was in a different genre. It was what Al Bell from Stax Records called the folk soul, which is a very difficult thing to do and almost never successful. But you could tell in Otis's voice at the time that he was very conflicted because he was coming off throat surgery, didn't know if he'd be able to sing like the old Otis, and he had to make this transition. And the song itself is a cry, is a plea to be left alone for a while, let him do his thing.
So one of the things that you talk about in your book is how Otis Redding was more than just a really successful performer and songwriter. But you say that he helped seed social change, that most of which occurred after his death. What do you mean?
Yeah, completely unwittingly, because Otis was not a political man. His songs were always apolitical. He never really wanted to express an opinion on that. Later in his life, he sort of started coming around toward that political bent. He was thinking of starting a union for black musicians and singers and so on and so forth. But his music was always rigorously apolitical. So he had to write about what he could write about, and that was the battlefield, basically, of his marriage and his love life, which was always hellaciously ambivalent thing to him. I mean, he could go from writing a song like Chained and Bound about love to You're One and Only Man, which was, you know, you completely a complete opposite kind of feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, right, it was like, you know, how do you reconcile that? But Otis did, because it was always about...
Yeah, I love you,
tortured.
But you're keeping me in prison, right?
Yeah, it's just, and security and things like that. It was like, it was the battlefield of love. But in Otis's mind, he had to have love. He had that fear of abandonment, and he always wanted to have that loving aspect of his life.
Mark Hrabowski is author of the book Dreams to Remember, Otis Redding, Stax Records, and the Transformation of Southern Soul. It's available now.